This is Baseball Today.
First and foremost, I'm a baseball player.
Baseball's a funny game. There's a round ball that comes in a square box.
And then I ended up getting up and talking. I started to really get going, and I had to kind of cut myself off.
I know the fans are great. You know, this is where I wanted to be from day one.
Play ball!
Baseball Today.
Hi there, welcome to the Baseball Today. It's Tuesday, April 6th, 2010. I am Eric Carabel, behind the glass, Jay Soderberg. What a great opening day for most of the other teams. Yankees, Red Sox, of course, was Sunday. Almost every team played on Monday. On Tuesday, the last of the teams that have not played will play. That's the Orioles and the Rays. And look, Monday was a great day. And not just because of Butler Duke or Tiger or anything else, baseball. And we bring in a guy who loves baseball probably as much as I do, Buster Olney, senior writer at ESPN The Magazine. Buster, Monday was awesome. Just awesome, wasn't it?
I tell you what, when you start out right away with Jason Hayward's first at-bat in Atlanta in his major league career after taking the opening pitch from Hank Aaron and then driving the ball, not like a little looping home run, I mean just killing the ball in his first at-bat, fans going crazy. I got emails from friends down in Atlanta talking about how, you know, they're going to save the picture that they had from that day. I mean, that's a moment, especially if Hayward turns out to be as good as we think he's going to be, that we're always going to remember throughout his career, that first day when he opened everybody's eyes. But you're right. I mean, all throughout baseball, there were great outings. Roy Halladay with the Phillies, you know, Tim Lincecum, his first start with the Giants. He was fantastic last night. It was a great day.
Great day, and there's going to be lots more. Explain to me why a day like today, it's beautiful in the Northeast. I mean, it might be beautiful everywhere. Why are there only, what, six games or whatever it is? I don't understand. Why do the Phillies and seven games? Why do the Phillies and Nationals need a day off after the first day of the season?
Well, they basically do that. They build in, for a lot of the cold weather sites, they build in the backup day for opening day so that they, if they have a rain out or a snow out on the first day, then they have a fallback position because, of course, opening day is usually the largest crowd of the year for a lot of these teams.
All right, well, I think it stinks because I want to watch day ball today, and there's no day ball to watch. So
it's like everyone's got to recover from yesterday so they don't start games till 7 o'clock Eastern tonight.
Yeah, I don't need to recover. I need more baseball. I need lots of it, and I can't wait until 7 o'clock Eastern. Okay, you were at Yankees-Red Sox on Sunday night, and as always is the case, not saying you're doing it, but as always is the case with either of those teams, there's panic on whichever team loses the first head-to-head game. Yankees lost the first game. You recorded some stuff that I heard about how the Yankees are old. Would you have done the same thing had the Yankees won on Sunday night, talking about how Posada and Jeter and Rivera are old? Would you have written the blog about Posada's glove already a problem?
Yeah, I would have. I don't think there's any question. Going into the year, the big question about the Yankees is their age. I mean, at some point, the fact that they have this older core of players is going to manifest itself. And maybe it'll be this year, maybe it'll be another year. The Posada thing has been hanging over the Yankees for a while. He's got a chance to be a Hall of Fame catcher. You know, he's accomplished a lot in his career. That's all absolutely true. It's also absolutely true that his problems behind the plate are becoming more acute as he gets older. You know, at the end of last year, you know, guys like CC Sabathia, Phil Hughes, Andy Pettit, people who pitched to him, some of them could deal with it. AJ Burnett really struggled with it. He was like a bulky horse who was struggling with a jockey who might have been having some issues. And in spring training, it was an issue as well. When I was down in Florida, you could see that Posada and Burnett were having a hard time because Posada was dropping pitches. Burnett was struggling to get on the same page with him. And it's not that either one of them are bad guys or, you know, necessarily doing anything wrong. They just don't work that well together. And so on the opening night, when Posada drops a ball that allows in the tie-breaking run, you know, that's a red flag. And I got a bunch of emails yesterday from scouts going, wow, that was ugly. And that's something that, you know, Joe Girardi, the Yankees manager, is going to have to weigh all year. Posada's a great offensive catcher. The question is, you know, because of that offense, will they overlook his defensive efficiencies? To this point, yeah, they have.
I guess they have no choice. I mean, they don't want a guy in there who can't hit. I wonder about Jesus Montero, though. I mean, he played in Double A last year. I would say it's a little bit early for him, but if he hits like gangbusters in Triple A this season, I mean, don't they have to consider him behind the plate?
Well, he is, and he is going to hit. I mean, there's no question about it. When you watch him take batting practice, you know, I had a couple scouts say that he reminds them, in terms of his style, of Frank Thomas. I mean, he can flat out hit, but the whole issue with him is Can he be a serviceable major league catcher? If the Yankees had been the team that had traded for Roy Halladay, Montero would have been the centerpiece of that deal. That's how much the Jays liked him. But the Jays also didn't like him as a catcher. They think he's too big to be a major league catcher. And the Yankees, in fact, worked on his throwing mechanics this spring because he takes so long to release the ball. So he actually doesn't reset his feet when he throws. He just anchors his back right foot and throws from that position. I still think he's got a ways to go in his defense before he becomes a serviceable major league catcher.
This is Baseball Today. It's Tuesday, April 6th. I'm Eric Cabral. That's Buster Olney. We're talking baseball, just like two guys should. And speaking of catchers, and I'm going to do this every day. I don't know why I forgot this on Monday, but I'm going to do birthdays every day. Jay, if you have any music for that, you know, so be it. But catchers, Ernie Lombardi and Mickey Cochran, two Hall of Fame catchers were born today. That's awesome.
Nice.
Pretty good, huh?
And, of course, I know you're going to know the answer to this. What is Ernie Lombardi sort of famous for, and his name has come up in recent years?
I think it's the batting title with Mauer, right?
Bingo. Before okay. Joe Mauer, the last catcher to win a batting title.
See, yeah, baseball.
I knew it. I knew you would know.
You knew I would know, and I didn't look that up. I remember that. I'm trying to think who the other one was. Wasn't there one other catcher?
Now you got me.
Bubbles
Thanks
Hargrave.
Thanks for returning the favor.
I'm trying to think. I remember there were three. Or was it the guy on the Dodgers? Maybe not. All right, I'll think of it at some point. I'm one of
and I probably listeners. Won't.
Anyway, also Burt Blylevin and Brett Boone. A lot of B's on birthdays today. Okay, Hayward. Well, actually, before we get to Hayward, sticking with the Yankees Red Sox, Josh Beckett. Seems to me an awful lot of money for Josh Beckett and John Lackey. And nobody seems to be discussing the fact that, you know, the Red Sox, that's a lot of money for two pitchers, and John Lester at some point will need money. Daisuke, obviously, is not going to get money eventually, but doesn't that not seem a lot of money for Beckett for them to do that?
You know, I think it's probably about what he would have gotten. I think it's in line where his market value is. Now, certainly, they know that they're a little bit out on a limb with Lackey, which is why they asked for the contractual protection. So if he has an elbow problem, they only have to pay him minimum wage. You know, Beckett hasn't had the arm problems that Lackey has. I do think that, you know, whether it would be the Mets or maybe the Dodgers, if they ever get past this divorce stuff, there would be a team out there, if Beckett had gotten through this year healthy, that would have given something like that. But I hear what you're saying. I mean, they certainly are on the hook now for, what, about $140 million for two pitchers in their 30s. And that'll give some pause to them, but that's the advantage of being the Red Sox or being the Yankees or being the Mets.
Right. Teams that aren't those three can afford to buy themselves out of mistakes, but those teams, I mean, you know, like the Pirates, if they had done something like this, I mean, you know.
It would be a killer.
You know it would go wrong, and then they wouldn't be able to get out of it, and it'd be a shame. You talked about Hayward, and obviously I was very impressed. And the Braves scored tons of runs off of Carlos Zambrano. Looked awful yesterday. And I wonder how long will Hayward bat seventh? I mean, Bobby Cox can't just leave him seventh all season long if he's the team's best slugger after McCann. He's going to have to bat fourth or fifth.
Well, I think actually I would say that he's a perfect number two hitter for them, and the way their lineup is, assuming that Chipper Jones and Troy Glaus stay healthy, which is, of course, one of the big questions about the Braves this year. But he's a great number two hitter because he's so patient. He's going to be a guy who's going to average between four and four and a half plate appearances per game. He's a left-handed hitter. He can run pretty well since he's 20 years old. And you talk about a guy who's going to get some pitches to hit, hitting in front of, you know, Chipper Jones and Brian McCann and being able to take advantage of that. That's what we saw yesterday. On display in his first major league at bat, takes two pitches when Carlos Zambrano is trying to jam him up and in, you know, ignores those, gets ahead in the count, and just hammers a fastball. I mean, that to me was a microcosm of what we're going to see all year with this guy. He's a great talent, and what separates him is that incredible plate discipline.
National League Rookie of the Year. And the only reason why, and I agree with you on the plate discipline, the only reason why I don't think he's going to bat second is I think Martin Prado is Placido Polanco. I think he's the same type of hitter, right-handed batter, a little bit of pop, but he's not going to strike out, can play all over, and he's going to hit 300, and I think the Braves are going to love Prado hitting second. I think when Chipper gets hurt, Hayward should bat third, but we will see. Very interesting there.
Now, yeah, Prado, I totally, one of the most underrated players in baseball right now. I mean, he carried the Braves for about 2 months last year, and I think this is the year sort of the casual baseball fan will get to know how good he is.
I agree. I think he's going to be like Polanco. On the other side, if we talk Yankees, you've got to talk a little bit of Mets. Now, Johan Santana looked terrific against Florida. Josh Johnson looked awful. But David Wright, my big question to you is, he hits the first swing of a season. He hits an opposite field home run, a little bit of a cheapie. But, hey, a home run's a home run, especially in that park. What kind of year do you expect from Wright? Wright and Santana have to carry this team to keep them in the race for a couple months until they get, you know, Beltran and Reyes healthy and all that.
I spent time with both those guys in spring training, and Santana talked about how great he feels. You know, last year, because of his elbow problem, before he had his surgery, he basically couldn't throw his slider. Well, now he's got his slider back. He's back to basically being a three-pitch pitcher. I think he's going to have a big year, and I think Wright is going to bounce back. The thing that really jumped out at me when I saw him for the first time is, man, he really worked a lot in his weight training during the offseason. I mean, you could see the strength across his upper body. And I think, you know, 1 year in Citi Field, and like Cole Hamels, he needed an offseason to sort of process where he was, to think about his approach. Now, I know that, you know, the casual fan would look at yesterday and say, well, he took, you know, took one pitch opposite field against Josh Johnson. That isn't necessarily going to happen all the time. In Josh Johnson's last spring training start, David Wright had done the exact same thing. So he really has gone back to his approach of trying to drive the ball the other way. When David Wright is at his best, that's what happens. Now, is he going to be a 35 home run hitter, you know, type guy? I don't think anybody's going to be that in Citi Field, but I think he's going to have a bounce back year.
Who's in trouble manager-wise? I mean, obviously it's one game for all teams except for two, but, you know, when you lose game, when you give up tons of runs, like Lou Piniella's not in trouble, I don't think, but if they keep giving up, you know, double-digit runs, maybe he won't want to, you know, deal with this anymore. What other managers, I don't think Piniella's one of them, but what managers are in some trouble early this season?
Freddy Gonzalez of the Marlins. You know, at the end of last year, there was about a 48-hour period in which Jeffrey Loria was considering firing him, and I know that they've denied that. Hey, bottom line, they were talking about it, and people in the baseball ops had to talk Jeffrey Loria out of doing that. And we saw in spring training that members of the front office were talking about this. Well, this team needs to contend for a championship. You know what? They're an organization that other teams really respect, but that's not a championship-caliber team. They're not that good defensively, and the back end of the rotation's a question mark. And if they struggle early, Freddy Gonzalez is going to get fired. And certainly Ron Washington, after the news came out during spring training that he flunked a drug test last year, that puts him two steps out onto the plank if they have a problem. Now, the Rangers really finished spring training well. They had a real nice vibe about him as they started the season yesterday. And, you know, he might be fine if they win, but if they lose early, he'd probably be in trouble.
What non-big-name players really surprised you on opening day? I mean, I was watching a little bit of Sean Markham's outing, especially when he hadn't given up a hit. And I was amazed that, you know, he didn't pitch at all the year before. I knew that. But I was amazed that only three guys over the last 50 years in the American League had pitched an opening day after not pitching the year before, and there were three yesterday just alone, Ben Sheets, Jake Westbrook, and Markham. But Markham looked terrific against a good Texas lineup. He really impressed me. Garrett Jones really impressed me, too.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, you know, I watched most of that start from Markham, and, you know, tell me if you agree with me. He's kind of like a poor man's Greg Maddux in the way that he moves the ball, the way that he changes speeds. You know, he's never going to win 20 games. He's never going to be that good. But in the way that he has command, and he just seems to have so much fun when he pitches, and the way that he, you know, that carries himself on the mound, and it's good to see him back and healthy. And during the game, I actually had reached out to the Jays and said, hey, if Markham gets through this game and he has a few minutes on the phone, and if you guys have a good result, but of course, that's not the way it happened. And Garrett Jones, I know that there are a lot of questions about whether or not he was going to come back and have a big year this year or be able to repeat what he did last year. I saw him take batting practice a couple days down in Florida, and the thing that really struck me was he's not one of these big slugger types who just swings as hard as he can with no real approach at the plate. He tries to drive the ball to left center field. That's something that he's really honed the last couple of years. And keep in mind, you know, there are going to be a lot of situations when the Pirates are losing games when the other team's basically going to say, well, you know what, here you go. Here's a fastball. We have a lead. See what you can do with it. those are part of the reasons why I think Garrett Jones is going to back up what he did last year and hit 30 to 40 homers.
I agree. I mean, I think this is a big home run hitter. He stole some bases. He kind of lingered in the minors for the Twins for a bunch of years, and they just never really gave him a legit shot. But if you need numbers, Garrett Jones, and I wrote a column yesterday, which I'm getting flack for. I wrote it before Monday's game started. I said I'd rather have Sean Markham than Ben Sheets. Now, I know you love Ben Sheets, okay? And enjoy those 16 starts he makes. But I said Monday morning, Sean Markham is the guy I want this year, and he made me look good on one day. Hopefully he can continue to make me look good.
You called it.
I did call it. I've been saying Markham for months, and I've been saying I don't want Sheets. And I watched Sheets last night, and he gives up runs in the first three innings. He can't hold runners, but then he settled down. I mean, I don't know if you got to see it at all, but I mean, he kept his team in the game, and then they came back.
Yeah, bits and pieces. Now, I talked to Billy Beane over the weekend. They really feel good about how he finished up his spring training. And the one thing that's really stuck out to them is his velocity. From the first day they saw him work out in January to spring training, he's throwing 92-93. A lot of times when guys come back from surgery, it takes them a while to build back up to their velocity. Sheets already has it. He's already got that foundation. And toward the end of spring training, he showed a really good curveball. So they feel good about his chance to bounce back, and maybe he's not going to be Ben Sheets of 2005 when he was so dominant, but they think he's going to be a pretty good pitcher. And keep in mind, he's going to be in a pitcher's park, and their outfield defense all year should be fantastic.
Rays start their playoff run tonight, even though you did not pick them. I don't know how you could do this. You said on that show we did a couple weeks ago, Rays are going all the way. Now you don't even have them getting into the playoffs.
Gutless.
Okay.
Totally gutless. There's no question about it. I mean, in the end, well, I think what's going to separate the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Rays, if the Rays don't win, it's going to be because they can't spend it mid-season to pick up guys in trades to help them in the way that the Red Sox and Yankees can. On paper, they're the best team as we leave spring training. As we start the year, they have the most talent. I had a GM in the American League East tell me that if baseball was played with 15 guys instead of 9, the Rays would win 130 games and run away with the division. That's how much talent they have. That's how deep they are. Sean Rodriguez really impressed scouts with his play this spring. And I had one, the same GM who made that comment about the Rays' depth said, look, he's a good player. He's not just some 4A guy who's, going to be okay. He's really going to help them. And he's part of their depth. And B.J. Upton looks like he's turned the light on here and figured it all out.
Rodriguez slated to start at second base today for the Rays with Ben Zobrist in right field. Last question, over-under wins on Roy Halladay. I'll set it at 19.
Over. Oh, no question. No, I think he's going to, and a guy, let's face it, there's a lot of luck involved, but I think he's going to win 21, 22 starts. His vibe around that team reminds me of when the Yankees got Roger Clemens. There was an excitement among the other players about the days that he started. It was like, a football Sunday, and I think position players are going to get pumped up. I think they're going to play with more adrenaline on the days he pitches. And you see the Phillies more than I do. Let's face it, there have been times the last couple of years as they've had the success where they've had a hard time getting the adrenaline going. That will not be a problem on the days Halladay pitches. He's going to win 21 or more.
Yeah, let's see what the adrenaline looks like tomorrow when Cole Hamels pitches. then we'll know a lot more about the Phillies. All right, Buster Olney, Baseball Tonight, ESPN The Magazine. Thanks so much. Check out his blog every day, and we'll have you back on the show soon.
That sounds great, Eric.
Thank you, Buster. All right, so great job, as always, by Buster Olney. If we could have him on more, we would. But, he's got a regular job, as do I. Let's move it now to Around the Diamond.
News from around the league.
Let's go Around the Diamond.
All right, the big news, I think, was Josh Beckett. Well, the big news was opening day. Josh Beckett gets 4 years, $68 million. Seems like an awful lot of money. And I wouldn't worry about what happened to Beckett on Sunday night. He'll be fine. He's not going to have to face the Yankees more than four or five times. But, playoff pitcher, it's pretty good. I wouldn't worry. One of the things that was interesting about Monday off the field is USA Today put out their MLB average salary report. And it said that salaries had dropped 17%. It was a big headline on the ESPN page. And then all of a sudden, salaries were up 1%. So I guess a lot of spending went on in baseball on Monday. But, salaries did not go down is basically what happened. But they didn't really go up all that much. $3.27 million is the average salary for a baseball player on an opening day roster. Man, how do those guys eat? Honestly, how do they afford the food that they put into their children? All right, and of course the Pittsburgh Pirates with the MLB's lowest payroll. No big surprise there. Not a whole lot of news. I was very impressed with the Jason Hayward. I was somewhat impressed by the Phillies. I watched the Phillies game, obviously, but you know, how much can you learn from? I'm sorry. I mean, Washington has no pitching. I mean, no pitching in the majors. I mean, you can make the case that their best starting pitcher clearly is Steven Strasburg, and their best reliever might be Drew Storen. But man, this is a hard game to watch because as soon as the Phillies started scoring runs, I mean, I was almost feeling bad. I mean, you know, you can't take Ryan Howard out of the lineup, but he had bases loaded in the ninth inning, and I was thinking, if he hits this pitch 500 feet and it's 15-1, well, someone's going to go hit him on Wednesday, and you know, he could break something. I mean, Chase Utley had his hand broken a couple years ago by John Lannon. You don't want to start any bad blood on opening day. You know, Phillies and Nationals play, what, 18 times? Phillies should win, you know, 12, 13 at least. I think last year they went 15-3. Anyway, not a great opening day for the Nationals. And please don't rip Barack Obama for his first pitch. Yes, it was a little bit high and outside, but, you know, he's not a young man. He's not a baseball player. You know, a lot of us could feel like we could throw the ball a little bit more accurate to home plate, but, you know, I can't run a country. Can't even run the household most of the time. So give Barack a break. By the way, congrats to Duke and Butler. Great game last night. Of course, I was rooting for Butler to meet that guy, Gordon. I call him Gordon Beckham. He's not Gordon Beckham. It's Gordon Hayward. But I was rooting for him to make that half-court shot at the buzzer because I had nothing on the line. Just, you know, and I don't hate anybody. Okay. I'm just, it would have been great to see Butler. That would have been awesome if he'd made that shot. I watched a bunch of Sean Markham. And of course, Jason Fraser blows the save. Which has a lot of fantasy implications, but, you know, good win for Texas at home. In terms of teams that are out of it or in it, nothing like that happens on opening day, so don't even get there. Mets, I do think, need to play well on the days that Johan pitches, and they did, and now we'll see in the next four games or three. I'm not sure if they need Oliver Perez for the first week or not, but, you know, they got to do well in those days. Zach Greinke, I felt bad, a little bad for him. Now, he can still win the Cy Young by doing what he did last year. He doesn't need to win 18 games. But, you know, he leaves. It's 4-1 going into the sixth. He's at home. He gives up a cheapy run. And it's 4-2. And then his bullpen in the seventh inning gives up six runs. It's going to be like that. I mean, the Royals, it's going to be like the Nationals, honestly. It's not going to be much fun. They're not eliminated yet. But, interesting stuff there. And what else caught my eye? Not much. Rockies, a good win. Good win beating a good Yovani Gallardo. Carlos Zambrano, I don't think he's hurt, but what bothered me about the outing, other than the eight runs in an inning and a third, is he showed no emotion. Now, he's been told to, you know, dial down his feelings. No, don't throw any fits. No Gatorade bottles on the field. Don't hit an umpire. Of course, he's got to be able to control himself. But if that takes away from his emotion in pitching well, then the Cubs have a problem. Because he's their ace, and they don't have a deep rotation. I mean, Gorzolani and Carlos Silver at the back of the rotation. So, Carlos Zambrano needs to pick it up in his next outing. Derek Lowe didn't look really that much better, but he made it through enough innings to win the game, and then his bullpen looked pretty good. I think the Braves' bullpen is going to be very good this season, and I think that's going to be a difference maker. And then late at night, I watched Lincecum, and that's just a joy. Even if Lance Berkman was in that lineup, I'm not sure how they're going to score runs off of him. Tim Lincecum, he's just awesome. That's it for Around the Diamond, I think, unless there's any notes here that I want to read, and I don't think so, there is. Jason, most career home runs hitting a home run in a first major league game. Frank Howard, 382. Orlando Cepeda, 379. Let's dial it down on Jason Hayward. I mean, I think he's going to be great, too, and I got him on all these fantasy teams, but the bottom line is it's one day. I think soon he's going to have to, like, he could move up to fifth in the order, you know, and Gloss could hit sixth, something like that. I could see that happening pretty much any day. The other thing about Greinke is, the last six Cy Young winners in the American League before Greinke all pitched kind of poorly on opening day. Halladay in 04, Johan Bartolo Colon, Johan again, CeCe Sabathia, Cliff Lee. Cliff Lee in 2009 gave up seven earned in five innings in his first start of the following season after winning Cy Young. Greinke only gave up one earned run. Greinke's special. But, you know, he might win 12 games on that Royals team and with an ERA at 2.20. That's it for the news. Now it's called to the pen.
Call to the pen. You've got email.
We do, from the best fans in the world, baseballtoday@espnradio.com. And thank you for making this podcast so successful. It is the first week of the season, so I expect a lot of people to listen. And I'll try to do the best we can. But obviously, you can check us out on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff there. Send those emails. We got three today. First up, this is James in Perth, Western Australia. What is it with these non-Americans? Yesterday, we had three Canadians. And we're starting out today's with another, I mean, not that there's anything wrong with people from around the world, but, you know, there's nobody in Texas who's writing. James writes, "Hey guys, huge fan of the show. I download and listen to the podcast on my way to work. Being in Australia means that the timing of the games in the podcast is slightly unusual. Podcasts refer to the previous day's games, and the games themselves are on at all times of the night and early morning, but I have a great time watching and listening. Opening day was a really fun morning for me. I got up at 1 a.m. local time to watch the Phillies destroy the Nationals, stayed awake to watch Verlander and Greinke in the 4 a.m. slot, and then struggled through Lindstrom's outing in the 7 a.m. game." Wow. That's a baseball fan. "As a Tigers fan, I was pleased to see some of the new additions to the lineup contribute to the win, though I still harbor concerns that the Tigers' lack of hitting ability at shortstop and catcher, despite great defense, will hurt them. I see the Tigers as legitimate contenders. What do you think? Keep up the outstanding entertainment analysis you provide daily." Didn't see a whole lot of the Tigers game, but obviously I can tell by looking, you know, I mean, what happened there. I mean, they're facing, you know, one of the top two or three pitchers in baseball in Zach Greinke. So it took them a while to get some runs. And then it's kind of like the Phillies. I mean, they get into like the underbelly of the Nationals, you know, the Royals, you know, Ramon Colon, Robinson Tejeda. I mean, that is Robinson, I believe. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, like it's Robinson. They got guys there who may not even be in the majors for most teams. So, but I was impressed with, I did see a couple of Austin Jackson at bats. He had the double late in the game. They're not going to run. You know, Damon's going to be fine. I don't understand why Magaly Ordóñez bats third, not Miguel Cabrera. Your best hitter is Miguel Cabrera. You should want to get him more at bats. And we know that every spot in a batting lineup is like worth 20 or 30 plate appearances during the season. You know, in other words, like Austin Jackson might get 720 batting first all year. Johnny Damon might get, you know, 690. Miguel Cabrera is not only the best player on the Tigers. I think he's going to win the American League MVP. Why is Magaly Ordóñez hitting third so he can get better pitches? I don't get it. I mean, that's the big problem. I think Magaly Ordóñez is batting third and Carlos Guillen fifth. And then after that, it gets weak. Brandon Inge, Gerald Laird, Scott Sizemore, I think is going to be fine. And I think he'll move up in the order. And then Adam Everett's not really very much of a hitter or a pitcher. Watching the Astros and Tommy Manziel, I was thinking, well, that's Adam Everett. I mean, awesome fielder, but, you know, can't really hit at all. Anyway, the Tigers should do well in Verlander's days. Actually, I seem to be a lot more high on the Tigers than most people. I think they're going to contend. I still have the White Sox winning the division. Nothing against the Twins. They're going to have a great year, too. But and I'm not being sensitive. I was surprised at the backlash from Twins fans. They're going to have a great year. I just think the White Sox are going to have a great year, too. The White Sox had a great start. Mark Burley, 6-0 over a bad Indians team. And I wonder if Jake Westbrook makes 30 starts, will he lose like 18 of them? I mean, that Indians offense doesn't look so enticing, and their bullpen doesn't look so either. Although that was all Westbrook's fault. He just didn't have it, and Burley did. See that play Burley made? Awesome play. Next up, this is Matt in Lincoln, England, UK. Another one from outside the United States. I was watching ESPN's coverage of Yankees Red Sox on opening day, and one of the guys in there was talking about scorecards. So I gave it a try, and it did keep me in the game, but I felt like a dork. How do you feel about scorecards? And are they cool, or are they a stupid dork's way to stay in touch with the game? There's nothing wrong with scorecards. I mean, maybe other people will disagree, but I don't do that anymore. But I taught my boys how to do scorecards, and you know, when I'm at a game in person, I like to look around, and I like to see the people, and I just like take it in. So I don't want to be worried so much about, you know, writing down whether it was a strikeout swing or not. You know, I don't know. I did it growing up, scorecard stuff, but, you know, I was a kid. I didn't know any better. But I think it's great. I don't have any problem with it, and I don't feel like I need to be kept in the game. Plus, I'm checking out five games at once. But you're not a dork, Matt. It's good stuff. Scorecards are fun. And basically, you know, for those, you're following along the game. See, the other thing is you can follow along a game online. When I was growing up, there was no online. So now, I mean, I can just follow a live game cast of a game that I can't watch, or if I'm in a hotel or whatever it is, or, you know, at an airport, and you can get live up to date what's happening, and you can check all the stuff out. So I don't see the need personally for scorecards anymore. But like, if one of my kids said, "Dad, you know, it's this game, I want to do it, I'll be at a game next week," and he wanted to do it, I'd be like, sure, no problem. You're not a dork. No way. There's plenty of dorks I know. This isn't one of them. And finally, this is Andrew in, drum roll please, Denver. But originally St. Louis. Okay, two good baseball towns. And in the United States. Where are the emails from the United States? Andrew writes, could a Cardinals fan ask for any more from their opening game? Pujols on fire. Colby Rasmus showing off with the bat and most impressively with the glove. Yadier Molina gets the Grand Slam, and Carpenter looks good in his first start. Not too happy about Ryan Franklin, though. This leads to my question. Who do you like to take over for Franklin if he can't be the closer this year? Do you like Kyle McClellan, or is there a good pickup in the free agents we could get? Thanks for your thoughts. That's Andrew in Denver, but he's obviously a St. Louis Cardinals fan. You know, I didn't really mention the Cardinals. I mean, that was one of the earlier games of the day, and when the Phillies were scoring their runs, the Cardinals were scoring their runs, and it was just a matter of time before Aaron Harang has just lost it. I don't know what happened to him. He's not throwing the same velocity. He doesn't have the same command as he used to. He was once a really good pitcher, but he's really not anymore if you look at his numbers from last year. And it was pretty obvious that at some point, I mean, the Cardinals got a run early, and then they just started to get men on base, and then they started to score a lot of runs. Pujols is a monster. I don't know what else we need to say about him. I did find it interesting. Colby Rasmus batting fifth in the order, which means he protects Holiday. He's going to get a lot of chances with men on base. And I think there's 20 home runs in him, at least. And I think it's assumed that he's going to hit for a low batting average because he did as a rookie, like 250 or so. But I don't know why that's presumed. Ryan Ludwig is a terrific number six hitter. Shouldn't be anything more than that. I think he can hit 25 home runs. The Cardinals' offense is going to be fine. I mean, when you're batting David Freese, a potential 20 home run guy, eighth, it's a good offense. I think maybe at some point, you know, Brennan Ryan may not be the best number two hitter, but and Rasmus might be. But either way, it's a good lineup, and it's a good rotation. And I think if Ryan Franklin is not the closer, and nothing changed from last night, even though a year ago on opening day, the closer situation changed. Jason Mott was the closer on opening day 2009, and Tony La Russa, when Mott got lit up, never let him get another chance, and Franklin replaced him. Watching Franklin in the ninth inning, I did tune into it because I thought a comeback was happening. Watching Ryan Franklin, I didn't get the sense that he was in any trouble. He was just getting some work in, and he came into the game up, you know, what, eight runs or whatever it was. So, seven runs. So I wouldn't worry too much about Ryan Franklin. I think McClellan is probably next and then Mott, but Mott does throw very hard. He didn't have such a good outing. I mean, they all gave up runs, so I just wouldn't worry about that yet. You know, again, and I hate to keep going back to this, but I mean, the Phillies made the World Series with Brad Lidge with a 7.21 ERA. So your closer is important and all, but it's really not as important as a lot of people think. The closer situation gets looked at closer when you get to the playoffs. That's really what it comes down to. But every closer is going to blow some saves. So if your closer, if Ryan Franklin's ERA this year is 4.50, he can still get 35 saves. He can get just as many as he did last year. I don't think he's going to lose the job tomorrow. I think he's going to be fine, Andrew, so don't worry. Those are the emails for today. Let's get some good ones in for Wednesday. Baseball Today at ESPNRadio.com. And now a few minutes for The View from Third.
Almost home.
Taking a look at tonight's matchup.
This is The View from Third.
And I get what Buster Olney's saying about why there's only seven games on the slate for the second or third day of the season, but it's weak. It's just weak, because what if the weather's great like it is today? The weather is awesome here in the Northeast. It's not even snowing in Connecticut. So why can't you have baseball? I mean, these teams need a day off. Come on. You can make up doubleheaders. First of all, I used to love doubleheaders growing up. Some of my best memories of being at the Vet, Veteran Stadium in Philly, were from doubleheaders. You know, me and some buddies would just go to the Vet, find our way down there somehow, before we were even driving, and we'd sit there and watch baseball for a few hours, and then in between games, you know, we'd find something to do, and then we'd watch the second game of a Phillies-Pirates doubleheader with Dave Parker in it. I mean, it was just awesome stuff. All right, on today's slate, obviously, Yankees-Red Sox is the marquee game, whether we like it or not. And I don't have any problem with it. You know, I mean, that's what people want to talk about. A.J. Burnett against John Lester. I'll put it to you this way. If the Yankees lose the game, it doesn't mean they're eliminated. And it's no reason to panic. And if Jorge Posada has three pass balls, well, still no reason to panic. Although I will say, I don't know if Jorge Posada is going to play today because he didn't play when Burnett started last year. So I guess you got to have some drama there that you wouldn't have in normal places. But, you know, I'll be watching Yankees Red Sox, I guess, at 7:10 because there's only two games on at 7:10. It's lame. Orioles Rays, opening day starter, Kevin Millwood. Wow, this is going to be some awesome baseball played in our nation's capital between the Nationals and the Orioles. James Shields goes for Tampa. And I think Tampa is going to be very interesting this year. I think they're going to be at least a 91 team, along with the Red Sox and Yankees. And I want to see what Sean Rodriguez does, and Ben Zobrist, my new favorite player, and a bunch of other guys on the Rays, and their bullpen, too. But I think it's a very good team. Other stuff going on, Nick Blackburn, Joe Saunders, that's exciting. Really? Those are your number two starters? I'm sorry, Twins. Nick Blackburn's your number two? I'm sure it'll help them to win 86 games, and everybody will say, Eric, how come they didn't, you know, you said they wouldn't win the division. Mariners Athletics, Ian Snell is your number two? Oh my goodness. Against Dallas Braden. I mean, that's awful. Who is this? I had no idea. Colorado's going with Greg Smith as their number two? I mean, I knew he made the rotation, but he's their number two starter. Okay. Greg Smith, the former Athletic, I assume. Randy Wolf for the Brewers, and Chris Young on the mound. Barry Zito against Wandy Rodriguez. You want to see a good young pitcher who gets strikeouts and is very good? It ain't Zito. It's Wandy Rodriguez of Houston. Look for, I mean, the Giants had really not a lot of problems against Roy Oswalt on Monday. Wandy Rodriguez is different. Very good pitcher and very good at home. So, seven games on the slate today, and I will, I guess, as watch as many as I can starting at 7 p.m. Eastern time because that's all it's on. Put some day games on, and then Wednesday I'll be in Bristol, so I'll watch what I can. I think there's some day games. Yes, there are day games, two day games that day. All right, good stuff there. But let's not get ahead of ourselves because we will have a show on Wednesday, and I will be talking baseball, and Jay will be pushing buttons, and we'll be taking your emails, and we'll be talking about Wednesday where there's 15 games, 15 glorious games. Anything else to add, Jay, before we sign off for that? I think we've filled our time, right?
Overtime, baby.
Hey, I'm all about the overtime. Thanks to Buster Olney from Baseball Tonight, ESPN The Magazine. Great stuff, as always, from him. And we're going to try to get him on as a somewhat regular guest this season. And, for people who like good interviews and good baseball talk, I thought Buster does a great job. Good job to Jay, as always. I'm Eric Carabel. Thank you for listening. We'll be back on Wednesday at some point, and we'll be talking baseball. So if you want to listen to baseball and want to keep the show doing well, download and listen. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Baseball Today. For more baseball talk, be sure to check out Baseball Tonight, Monday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.
Yeah, that's what we've been looking for.